The first one deals with kinship in the sense of our ancestors. On June 9th, 1603, Samuel de Champlain attended an Algonquin victory ceremony along the banks of the Ottawa River. He sat with the Grand Sagamore, Bessouat, in front of a row of spikes topped with the heads of the defeated enemy, and watched as the Grand Sagamore's wives and daughters danced before them entirely naked, wearing only necklaces of dyed porcupine quills. After the dancing, the conversation turned to theology. The Grand Sagamore told Champlain that there was one sole God. After God had created all things, he stuck some arrows in the ground, and these turned into the men and women who populated the earth. Champlain told the Grand Sagamore that this was pagan superstition and false. There was indeed one sole God, but after he had created all things, he took a lump of clay and made a man, and then took one of the man's ribs and made a woman. The Grand Sagamore looked doubtful, but following the rules of hospitality, remained silent. Xie Ling Yun in the 12th century used to write poems together with his cousin, Xie Hui Lien. One day his cousin was away, and Xie Ling Yun had trouble composing. That night, his cousin appeared in a dream, and together they wrote, "Spring grass grows beside the pond. The garden is full of singing birds." Xie Ling Yun believed that he had written these lines thanks to divine intervention. Each year in the village of Pulapudipet in Tamil Nadu in South India, a very young girl is selected to marry a frog. The customs of a traditional Indian wedding are followed. Half the village becomes the bride's family and half the groom's. Accompanied by a marching band, the groom is led on a white horse to be welcomed at the bride's home. The entire nuptial ceremony is performed. The couple circles the sacred fire 7 times. The edge of the bride's sari is tied to the groom's sash. Their heads are held together by the priest. After the wedding banquet, the frog is released in a pond. The bride returns to her life as a schoolgirl. When she grows up, she is free to take a second, human husband. An Indian journalist visited Pulapudipet to witness the ceremony. He asked the villagers why, each year, they marry a very young girl to a frog. No one knew. It was just what they had always done. It is not to honor the dead, it is to keep them from coming back. The heavy stones on the grave, the high walls and fences around cemeteries, the sturdy, well-sealed coffin. The dead with hands and feet tied, the dead implored to stay where they are. The dying sent off somewhere else to die, so the dead won't linger in the house. Their eyes are closed. They are wrapped in a shroud so that they cannot see the way back. Circuitous paths to the graveyard, burials at night, masks on their faces that they cannot remove. A tiny house for them to live in and stay there. Food and drink on the grave, the corpses dressed in fine clothes, money in the grave, so that they will not come back for more. A canoe or raft sent out to sea, the body burned to ashes, the body eaten by vultures. Loud noises, firecrackers, gongs, shouts, church bells ringing to frighten them away. While the corpse is still in the house, one cannot eat, for it too will want to eat. The name of the dead cannot be spoken, for it will think it is being called. The abipones of the Gran Chaco had the given names of plants and animals. When one of them died, they had to invent something new in the language. The word for jaguar, a common name, changed 3 or 4 times a year. By the end of the 19th century, there was no one left who spoke the language and could inadvertently summon the dead. So this segues into the pause poem. I actually haven't done any translating in many years, except for Beidou, but Beidou only writes one short poem a year, so it's not a lot of work. But lately I've been putting together a big selection of pas for New Directions and revising my old translations, which are now like more than 25 years old, and wondering, you know, what was I thinking at the time, trying to recuperate my thought processes, and also translating a lot of previously untranslated early poems and also his last poems. So this is one of the early poems written when Paz was in his 20s. And it's a little long, it's 3.5 pages. It's called Interrupted Elegy. Today I remember the dead in my house. We'll never forget the first death, though he died in a flash, so suddenly he never reached his bed or the holy oil. I hear his cane hesitating on a step of the staircase, the body gaining strength with a sigh, the door that opens, the corpse that enters. From a door to dying, there's little space and hardly enough time to sit down, raise your head, look at the clock, and realize it's 8:15. Today I remember the dead in my house, the woman who died night after night, and her dying was a long goodbye, a train that never left. The greed of her mouth hanging on the thread of a sigh, her eyes never closing, making signs, wandering from the lamp to my eyes, a fixed gaze that embraces another gaze, far off, that suffocates in the embrace and in the end escapes and watches from the riverbank how the soul sinks and loses its body and finds no eyes to grab hold on. Was that gaze inviting me to die? Perhaps we die only because no one wants to die with us. No one wants to look us in the eye. Today I remember the dead in my house, the one who left for a few hours and no one knew into what silence he had gone. After dinner, each night, the colorless pause that leads to emptiness, or the endless sentence half hanging from the spider's thread of silence, opens a corridor for him to return. We hear his footsteps. He climbs. He stops. And someone among us gets up and closes the door shut. But he, on the other side, insists. He lies in wait in every recess and hollow. He wanders among yawns at the edge of things. Though we shut the door, he insists. Today I remember the dead in my house, faces forgotten in my mind, faces without eyes, staring eyes, emptied out. Am I searching in them for my secret? The god of blood, my blood moves, the god of ice, the god who devours me. His silence is the mirror of my life. In my life, his death is prolonged. I am the final error of his errors. Today I remember the dead in my house, the scattered thoughts, the scattered act, the name strewn, lacunae, empty zones, holes where stubborn memory rummages, the dispersion of encounters, the ego with its abstract wink, always shared with another ego that is the same, the rages, desire and its mass, the buried snake, the slow erosions, the hope, the fear, the act, and its opposite. Within me, they persist. They beg to eat the bread, the fruit, the body, to drink the water that was denied to them. But there is no water now. Everything is dry. The bread is tasteless, the fruit bitter. Love domesticated, masticated, in cages with invisible bars, the onanist ape and the trained bitch. What you devour, devours you. Your victim is also your executioner. Heap of days, crumpled newspapers and nights stripped of bark, and in the dawn of the swollen eyelids, the gesture with which we undo the running knot, the necktie, and now the lights have gone out in the streets. Greet the sun, spider. Be not rancorous. And more dead than living, go off to bed. The world is a circular desert. Heaven is closed and hell empty.